Welcome to the Del Walmsley Radio Show. Listen and grow as Del questions the status quo, encourages you to think differently, and empowers you to make a better life. Get ready as Del challenges core beliefs, seeks the truth, and reveals the roadmap to the lifestyle you really want. And now your host, multi-millionaire, national award-winning investor, CEO and founder of Lifestyles Unlimited, Del Walmsley.
Welcome to Del Walmsley Radio Show, where the hype ends and the help begins. I'm your host, Del Walmsley, and as always, we're working on your financial freedom. My friends, today I'm going to talk about an article that someone sent me. They wanted me to go through it, and they basically said, look, this article this person wrote sounds just like your seminar or many pieces and parts of your seminar, which is basically this person telling you all the mistakes they've made in real estate investing. And the concept is that, well, why would you go out there and make the mistakes on your own when you can go to a two-day seminar and learn 95% of what you need to do, both to know what to do, which is important, but also to know what not to do, which is also important. And the email that was sent with this article is basically going, I don't understand why somebody like this wouldn't come to a program like yours where, you know, they can learn all this stuff in just 2 days. And I've thought about that many times, and I think about myself and other people that I meet, and there seems to be some type of an ego problem, I think it is. That might not be the right word for it, but I think it's an ego problem where people do not feel like they enjoy their victory if they didn't invent the way they got there. So I think some people that don't join up are like, you know, I'll figure this all out myself. It can't be that difficult. And what I've said for 35 years is that real estate is counterintuitive. Just about everything you would think you should go right, you should really go left. It's really hard to understand that. But that's what business is like. Business is like you think it should happen this way. And that's why so many people are bad at it, because it really should happen another way, a way you're not doing it. And seeing that, you know, is really a weird kind of thing. So I've sort of paralleled it to everything. When I first started lifting weights and stuff, I took a course. Not actually wasn't a course. A guy had a book. I read his book. I followed his diet, nutrition, followed his exercise program, got massive results. Later on, when I wanted to go to be an Olympic lifter, I joined the Junior Olympic team, and I got trained by a coach. And I did it exactly the way he said to do it, which is absolutely nothing like what I thought it should be done. I mean, it was hours of him telling me, nope, flatten your back, keep your head up, legs closer together, get your angle better, blah, blah, blah. It was all about doing the right thing. And I spent hours in the gym, just drove me crazy learning this technique. I remember when I learned to box, it was the same thing. I thought we'd get out there and we'd just start boxing, we'd start fighting. No, it was hours and hours and hours sitting in front of a bag. Left, jab, 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 right hook, jab, 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 right hook. Combination, boom, boom, boom. Then it was get over to the bag, pa 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 pa. Then it was skip the rope, all this stuff, building your timing. You know, left hand, right hand, right hand, left hand, combination, hook, uppercut. And I go, when do we fight? You know, when do we get out here and do this stuff? Said, you'll be ready. When you're ready, we'll let you go out there. And I remember I got out there and I fought some guy who had not spent the time in the gym doing the basics, developing the eye-hand coordination. And it wasn't a matter about how big. This guy was way bigger than me. I think he was like 6'3", 240. I was like 6 foot tall, 198, something like that. And yet I was able to beat him. In fact, I think I knocked him out. He didn't have the technique. Big and strong, tough guy, but he didn't have the technique. And I've learned through life that it's better just to go get some help. I remember when I tried to play guitar. I couldn't play guitar. I had friends that could pick up a guitar and just play it by ear. I couldn't do it. I had to go get lessons. I had to learn how to do it. It's just that way in life. Some people are willing to learn and other people are not. Some people have to go out there and make mistakes. Otherwise, they don't feel like it's really their success. I think the fun comes in failing in some people's lives, some people's minds, and so forth. They really think that, okay, if I go out there and hack through this, then I've accomplished something. But to me, you go out there and hack through this and fail and fail and fail and fail and finally get some success at the end, all the failures have cost you so much in time and money and energy, it just doesn't make any sense to me. I'm someone that wants to go out there and, hey, show me how to do this right so I can hit it out of the park the first time I hit it. Now, even if you learn how to do it right, you may not hit it out of the park the first time. There's still going to be sensitivity training that needs to come about. You're going to have to learn. In other words, here's the right way to throw, you know, a left jab. You still got to practice it. Here's the right way to throw a right hook. You got to practice it. You know, it's not something that you can do. But at least you do it the right way. If you pick up bad habits, you get wiped out. And man, you get knocked out on a few real estate deals and your money's gone. Your credit's gone. Your enthusiasm for getting ahead in life is gone. And that's what I see. So this guy sent me this article about this guy. And the article, if you want to look it up, is called Semi-Retired MD. Okay. Well, I think that sums it all up. He's semi-retired. He wasn't good enough at it to retire. But it's interesting because he made some money with real estate. And then he made the big mistakes. So there it is. You know, they're doctors. I think that's probably part of the situation. If you're a doctor, you're the smartest man in the room. We always know that. Every guy that's a doctor thinks he's the smartest guy in the room. And so they thought they'd just go out there and try it out themselves. They got some money. They got the money to risk, right? So it goes on and says, we're telling these stories in hopes that it will help your readers avoid these similar mistakes. And then they go on and give a disclaimer that, you know, they're not going to prove out any of these numbers and things and whatever. They're not CPAs and attorneys, and they can't give financial advice and all that. Good disclaimer stuff we like to see. So I read on. It says, first real estate investing in 2001. At that time, I was just started working as a management consultant. The first time in my life at age 29, I had some money to invest. I partnered with a close friend of mine because we believed that pooling our money together, we could grow our portfolio quicker. All right, so let's start right there. First thing I teach in class is pooling money doesn't make sense in most cases, especially if you're going to buy single family houses and stuff. The only reason pooling your money makes sense is if you're going to go out and do something that's so large that it takes lots of people's money put together to get it done. Otherwise, you can buy a rent house by yourself, own it by yourself, keep it by yourself, and make all the benefits by yourself much better than you can by creating the accounting nightmare of splitting everything in two and accounting everything by one halfsies into your tax returns. And the other problem, anything that has two heads has got to be a serpent. In other words, when it comes time to make decisions, you can't agree on things. It does not matter who you are. You're the best of friends before you start this project. Once you get into it, at some point along the way, one of you is going to say, wait a minute, what are you doing? Stop doing that way. Let's do something different, et cetera, et cetera. Goes on and says, my first property was a college rental. There we go. Number one, don't buy college properties. I've said this 1,000 times. It's in my seminar 1,000 times. I have a member that was a member, did real well with us for a while, bought a couple apartment complexes, made a lot of money, and then he decided he was going to do college rentals. I told him, don't do it. Absolutely don't do it. He said, well, you know, these are a better deal. You should understand it. And he went and he got a lot of people to put money up for him. He syndicated a bunch of apartment deals, and he lost the apartment deals. The college rental business is completely different than any other kind of rental business, and it is terrible. All you have to do is think about what is the worst thing in the world to do is take care of somebody else's kids. Taking care of your own is one thing, maybe even bad enough, but taking care of other people's kids is outrageously terrible. And having them tear up your house and having to deal with people that are not responsible, and also it's only X number of months a year that you have rental income, so it's everything about it's wrong. I could go on for hours. Let's just say don't do it. It goes on here and says, hey, it was a three-bedroom, blah, blah, blah. We bought the property for $104,000 with no money down back in those days until 2008. crash, you could purchase properties with no money down. We did it all the time. And we have even some properties, we've done it recently, that you could do it, but it's not an all-the-time thing like it used to be. This property yielded only an amount of cash flow of about $100 a month after expenses. So you can see the guys paid way too much for this property, because after all their expenses, it only made $100 a month. While the margin was small, we'd make a little cash flow each month, and we'd only go negative if there was unexpected expenses. As it turns out, this was the last property we bought together. So there it is. Boom. I didn't even see that part. They're already one property. They're already decided, man, that partnership is not the right way to go with this stuff, man. So they did one property, and what they found out was that they didn't do it right. And when you don't do it right, $100 a month cash flow is not going to cover all your expenses. There's all kinds of things you should have been taken care of up front. You know, we totally remodel a property to where when we buy it 50 cents on the dollar, put in a lot of money, make it perfect, and now that thing is perfect for a while. Keeps the cost down. Going on, even though I had read books about investing and knew about merits of investing for cash flow, so there it is. He read books. That's how he got his knowledge. And had the understanding of the allure of getting cash flow, right? I very quickly let that go and wanted to get into the getting rich quick scheme, where the speculative gambles as was too strong. So I didn't take much to convince me to jump on the next opportunity that came up, flipping vacant lots. All right, so there we go. He lasted one rental property, one partnership deal, and all that stuff that he started out to do is gone. Obviously, for good reasons. He didn't make any money. He had problems with his friend. The whole thing just sort of fell apart. Right? And it wasn't getting rich. So what did he do? Number one thing I tell you in my seminars, in the first 5 or 10 minutes of my seminar, most people are speculating. They're not investing. Speculating is buy low, sell high. It's being finding somebody that you can sell to that's a greater fool than you are. You paid for something, and now you're expecting someone that has, for no reason at all, willing to pay you more for it to what you paid for it, simply because somebody in this situation is a fool. The problem is with gambling, or the greater fool theory, which is gambling, somebody else will give you more for something you paid for, is you end up being the fool many times, right? So he goes on and he says, the opportunity sure looked a lot sexier anyway. Leading up to 2008, crash developers were buying large plots of waterfront lots, putting in utilities and dividing the lots. Some of these developments were so large that you could easily see using a satellite picture. One of the ones we invested had 15,000 empty lots. Even to this day, most of the lots sit empty. Even to this day, this was in 2008, the lots are empty. And with only a house or two in the city block worth of lots. The first deal was a home run. There we go. That's the worst that happens in a Ponzi scheme, is you make money on the first thing that you touch. And then blah, 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 it goes downhill from there. It said, we invested $15,000 in empty lots. Even to this day, my first deal was a home run. We bought a vacant lot for $150,000 with no money down and sold it 1 year later for $350,000. This was quickly followed by another small win of about $100,000. And when we come back from break, we'll tell you what happened to the rest of that investment structure. We'll be right back with the Del Wamsley Radio Show.
Teaching you with a roadmap to creating the lifestyle you really want. Keep listening. The Del Wamsley Radio Show returns in moments.
Working hard but still falling behind? Learn how real estate investing can help you build income and move forward with purpose. Text RADIO to 88007. That's RADIO to 88007. Presented by Lifestyles Unlimited.
You're hearing the Del Wamsley Radio Show. Want more life-changing knowledge? Access our podcast and listen on demand at lifestylesunlimited.com under the radio tab. Now your host, Del Wamsley.
Welcome back to Del Wamsley Radio Show. Today we are doing an article that was sent to me about mistakes people make in real estate investing, and it's, you know, just typically same stuff that I teach, except that if you come learn it from our program, then you don't have to make these giant mistakes. We'll get back to it in just a second. Before we do, I want to remind you that getting to our classes, we have a two-day workshop coming up very quickly here in Honolulu, Hawaii. Great way to take a vacation. Go on out there October 11th and 12th. Get out there and get some information to change your life while having an incredible time visiting Hawaii. Also, we have one coming up in Richmond, Virginia on the 8th and 9th of November. So that's coming up also. You want to get in for those. Now, having said that, as we went to break, they were talking about they decided after the rental, trying to do rental properties didn't work out for them, decided to flip lots. And the first two lots they flipped was right at the peak of the market. And one of the things that's interesting is speculation. That's what this guy said he changed to from investing to speculating. Speculation is what drives the market up radically. So when you find that somebody can buy something like a lot and then turn around and sell it for more than what it was sold to you for, that's happening because there's speculation. It's pure and simple, a bunch of idiots bidding the price up on something that they think other idiots are going to be willing to pay them more for. And he got away with it two times. That's the way this Ponzi scheme stuff works. He got it out two times, and then it happened, what I call the Midas touch. Once you get lucky and speculate on something and make some money on it, I saw it happen to me in the stock market once I started gambling in the stock market. You think that you can do no wrong. You see that money just sitting there, that easy money, that something for nothing, instantaneously, gratificationally diseased, midnight madness, something for nothing money that just boom. And so he bought two lots, made some money with them, and then bought four more lots, not thinking anything about it. And then after he bought four more lots, the Midas touch, and the Midas touch, if you don't know what this story is, King Midas had a situation where everything he touched turned to gold. And that turning to gold was a problem for him because he touched his girlfriend, she turned to gold. He touched food, it turned to gold. And ultimately, he died and lost everything. But he thought, you know, he had one wish, I wish everything I touched turned to gold. Well, it did. And then he had no food, no water, and no friends. Well, the Midas touch is, I use it as in the context of once you believe you have the Midas touch, you believe everything you touch turns to gold. And so right after he bought these four lots, he then goes ahead and buys two condos. And the only thing worse than buying student housing is buying condos. Condos are the worst thing you could possibly buy. Oh, I love it. We did a piece on this Instagram or something like that. TikTok. And man, all the young kids went berserko, lost their minds. How could you say a condo's a terrible investment? I bought a condo. Condos are great. You know what condos are? Condos are the only real estate you can afford if you have no money. And you live someplace where stuff's expensive, you can buy a condo. Why? Because you don't own anything. You own the airspace inside of four walls. That's all you own. You have an association that charges you for everything you do, and it's just a nightmare. You're living in almost like a prison. It's living in an apartment that you pay 10 times more to own than what you would if you just rented the apartment. It's a nightmare situation. So the guy goes on and reads, after these two quick wins with the flipping of lots, we bought four more vacant lots. I was clearly hooked. This led me to buy, on my own, two high-end condos in downtown Seattle. This was an addition to a condo I already owned and just one block away. At this point, I was flying high, or at least I thought I was. Then came the crash of 2008. Flipping vacant lot flipping, what did he learn from it? In the years between 2003 and 2006, I bought a total of six lots. Two I sold for profit, as described above, and the other four I was stuck with for a while, it turns out. Immediately after the crash, my properties weren't even worth the money I paid in for the property taxes each year. Something I bought for $150,000 now was worth less than $1,000. I bought it for $150. It was worth less than $5,000. So he bought four of these at $150,000 a piece. That's $600,000, and they were worth $5,000 each, which was $20,000. He lost $500,000 on condos. Now, here in Houston, during the debacle of 87, that's when the crash hit in Houston, 87, 88, condos went down to $500 a piece. Not $500 down. You could buy an entire condo unit for $500 because nobody wanted them, because the association fees were higher than the property taxes, insurance put together. So it was just an insane thing to buy. Nobody would buy them, and they were useless and worthless. I bought one. That's how I know. I bought it to live in. I wasn't an investor yet. I didn't understand investing. I was only just buying for a place to live. And like I said, it was a cheap place I could afford to buy to live and to think I owned something and that I was paying money towards ownership. I bought it for $40,000. I owned it for 27 years. At the end of 27 years, I sold it for $27,000. I was losing a couple hundred dollars a month. It rented for like $400 a month. And the mortgage payment was $400 a month. The association fee was $150 a month. You name it, I was losing money every month on this thing. It was a terrible deal, okay? He goes on and says, in order to sell the lots, for example, I had to come out of pocket $10,000 because of the remaining mortgage was more than the sales price. And the losses didn't even include the property tax payments, homeowners' dues, and mortgage interest that I paid on them over the years. So now he's to get rid of the lots. Forget about the condos. To get rid of the lots, he had to pay $10,000 out of pocket each one. And wow, what can you say? It's typical. It really is. He goes on and shows that his purchase price for these different ones, he has a whole schematic here, paid $150 for one, got $32 for it, paid $123 for one, got $50 for it. So he lost $120,000 on that one. He lost $73,000 on that one. He paid $62 and got $25. So he lost $35 on that one, and then he did $62 and sold it for $24. Lost $35 on that one there. The other thing that isn't illustrated here in this table, the other thing that isn't illustrated in this table is how difficult it was to finance a loan after the crash. For example, we got a 3-1 ARM for a lot two and was facing a large balloon payment at the end of a little over $125,000 in 2009. Right after the crash, unfortunately, we couldn't refinance because all of the banks had completely shut down their loan programs for vacant lots. I played chicken with the bank and threatened to foreclose, and the bank came back and agreed to loan repayment program where I would pay off $125,000 loan in 12 payments. As you can imagine, this required quite a few extra shifts to pay for this mistake. There you go. What can you say? I mean, it's just typical. I mean, this is the stuff we teach. This is the stuff we teach. Don't do this stuff, right? Wouldn't you like to know all this stuff? And there's hundreds of these things you need to know. Goes on and says, immediate and forced appreciation. Nowadays, what he does is he looks for forced appreciation. It's appreciation that you can control. Immediate appreciation is buying a property at a discount, and forced appreciation is raising the value of the property by increasing the income that it generates. It's part of the something program that he has invested in. So the bottom line, you get what it is. What we do, there it is. He's finally figured it out. We go buy properties for cheap, and then we fix them up and make them worth more money. So he comes back and he talks about, let's talk about the high-priced condos. Just before the market crash, I purchased two condos in downtown Seattle. These were about a block away from another high-priced condo that I already owned. My original plan was to live in one and sell the others. Unfortunately, by the time I was ready to move, it was just after the crash, and the value of the old condo was trying to sell was dropped significantly. Therefore, I decided to rent the two new condos. This was just the beginning of the problem. First, the rents were considerably less than the mortgage. So when you included all of the other expenses, I had to come out of pocket several thousand dollars just to support each condo. This, when added to the money I was paying on vacant lots in Florida, was financially crushing. Because I was underwater with each of my properties, I ended up having to work 26 hospital shifts a month just to stay afloat. There it is. He's paying for all of these losses by working his tail off. He goes on and says, because of the above problems, I decided to sell the properties to get myself out of this mess. Unfortunately, the building was brand new when I bought it, and several of the construction defects were a result of multiple lawsuits against the condo HOA and the developer. However, there was a lawsuit involving the building. No one buying in that building can obtain a loan or insurance, which makes it very difficult to sell. After about 5 years of stress and working extra shifts, I finally was able to sell both condos at a loss. So there you go, folks. The last thing about a condo is condos are owned by unsophisticated, ignorant to real estate people. In other words, you buy a condo because you don't know what you're doing. You own a condo because you don't know what you're doing. The condo association is run by the people who own the condos who don't know what they're doing. So all the business decisions that are made on the process are not made by really sharp business, real estate business transaction people. If I buy an apartment complex, I'm going to find out everything about that apartment complex before I buy it. You buy a condo, the people selling it to you, you're blind. You're just buying into an association. Nobody actually knows if the building is perfect or not. In fact, in most cases, they're not, because the builders are the association when they first start. So there's no one to protect your interests. So there you go. Stay away from condos. And that's one lesson learned. There's a lot of lessons learned here. First, if you're buying a rental, you should want to be to not be upside down on it, which, in other words, they bought very expensive properties that don't cash flow. High-priced homes and condos rarely cash flow. Okay, we talked to that in the 2 day. Going on, it says they can change the rules on you at any point with a homeowners association, and this nearly happened to me in my primary residence when we nearly instituted a rental cap. This happens. All three condos in Seattle would have been under a rent or had been run under a rental cap. Third, the very new construction. If a building is construction defect, the lawsuit can tie up your property for years. Okay. He goes on and says college rentals. The next thing he did was he tried college rentals. This was the very first investment. In the end, probably the worst of all my investments. As I mentioned above, I purchased this property with a friend in 2001. My friend took responsibility for managing the property because it was located where he went to college. Things started out as expected for the first several years. The rents covered the expenses and the property cash flowed a small amount every year. After a few years, I didn't pay much attention. The property figure was operating either slightly positive or neutral. Over the years, I could occasionally hear about issues. 1 year, some students punched holes in the wall. Other years, I'd hear that there was massive vacancy. It wasn't until 14 years later I finally understood the sheer magnitude of the problem of the property. And here is the actual results of the property. 2007, he lost $6,386. 2008, he lost $4,100. 2009, he lost $6,669. In 2010, he lost $4,900. In 2011, he lost $1,017. In 2012, $1,900. In 2013, $12,217. 2014, $7,000 lost. 2015, $9,000 lost. 2016, $3,000, all total $57,695 lost on one single student housing rent house. Lessons learned on this. First, if you're going to partner, be sure to have clear defined roles. In this case, we should have laid out the expectations and the roles up front. There you go. Anything that's got more than one head has to be a serpent. Second, with any investment, be sure to look at the numbers on a regular basis and make adjustments. Ideally, you operate your rentals like a business. They don't. People buy them. They go, I hate it. And they just don't pay attention to it. Lose their behind on it. Third, if a problem arises, you need to address it immediately. You can't ignore it. If it can't be fixed or continues to be a problem, as it did with this property, you need to sell and cut your losses short. If you had recognized the problem sooner and sold the property, we could have avoided considerable losses. Fourth, $100 a month in cash flow isn't nearly enough to cover expected expenses and vacancy. This is why we teach you to maximize your cash flow. We have students who are getting more than $600 per door in cash flow. So it looks like this guy's got a course. That's what this is all about. He's selling a course. It's all good info, though. And unfortunate for him, he had to lose hundreds of thousands of dollars to figure it out. He could have taken my course, right? But the bottom line is you don't need to make all those mistakes. You need to get in and learn, number one, what we do and how we do it. Number two, what you shouldn't do and why not, right? So there's so many things on how to locate and evaluate and very much how to evaluate these deals, how to negotiate these deals, how to contract these deals, how to go in and do feasibility on these deals. You know, you have to do your inspections and you have to do lease audits and you have to know what things you're what you're really buying. You have to learn how to rehab them, how to find the right contractors, how to finance them, the correct way to finance them, right? Because there's all kinds of pitfalls in financing. And you need to understand that right out of the blocks. Then you need to know how to rent them. How do you put a tenant in? What's the right tenant? How do you screen the tenant? So on and so forth. How do you get out? What's your exit strategy? How does that work? How do you progress? How do you move from single family into small multifamily properties? How do you move from small multifamily into medium multifamily? How do you move into larger multifamilies? How do you syndicate properties? If you actually want to do business with other people, how do you do that legally? And how do you do that effectively? How do you syndicate properties correctly so that you don't lose your behind and everybody else's money, for that matter, in these deals? There's so much that you can learn and so much you should come and learn. And that's why you need to get into one of our seminars. So if you're not a member, you can join for as little as $297. Just text the word radio to 88007. Text the word radio to 88007. And you can get in on a special for $297 for 1 year. That is a family membership. That's husband and wife and children 18 years of age and younger for that one membership. So look forward to seeing you at one of our courses. And remember this always, it's not just the money, it's the lifestyle. Have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow.
Listening to the Del Walmsley Radio Show. Want more of Del's unconventional wisdom? Go to lifestylesunlimited.com and click the radio tab. Listen to past shows, hear podcasts on demand, and find out how you can change your life today. The Del Walmsley Radio Show is part of the Lifestyles Unlimited Radio Network.
The information and opinions you hear on the Del Walmsley Radio Show are those of the host, Del Walmsley, his guests, and his callers, and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of this station, its affiliates, its management, or advertisers. The Del Walmsley Show is for entertainment purposes only. Please consult a professional regarding your personal investment needs. Nothing presented on the Del Walmsley Show constitutes an endorsement, recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or security.